Hi, welcome to Mixed Identity, the podcast where I, your host, Tether Puri, collect the stories of people who have more than one identity, multiracial or multi-ethnic, but we're open to all stories here. In this first session, I typically have some response to audience feedback or participation or conversations I've had with other mixed race people. But it's going to be a little different because I have been having lots of thoughts and I want to have a conversation with you. And this is a reoccurring thought that I have and feeling that I've had, and it became very palatable for me last week about being mixed race. Is one of the things is this constant feeling of not belonging anywhere, and not belonging to any of the racial groups that I'm part of or any of the cultures that I'm in. And so what brought this feeling forward for me was there was a Christmas party I went to for the United Indians of All Tribes. Foundation had their Christmas dinner, which was a lot of fun, but a big part of that dinner is not only eating and singing Christmas carols, which was my favorite part, but part of that is there's a Santa's workshop run by Toys for Tots, and you get to take a picture with Santa, and all these kids are running around the building with these, you know, giant toys, and it's really exciting for all of them. But I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and I don't know how to explain to them that they don't get to go to Santa's workshop because we're not the people that need to be served by Toys for Tots. We can buy our own toys, and we have so many toys. And so really quick, I didn't deny my kids going to the Toys for Tots. What I did is I went and donated more than the amount the toys cost. But they were able to go into the workshop and pick a little toy, and it made sure they were, you know, steered them away from the giant toys. It's pretty impressive, the gifts that were given out at this event for Toys for Tots. I've never been to an event where the toys were given out. I've been to events where they collect Toys for Tots and things like that. And so that's really where I was like, is this a party that's supposed to be for me? Am I supposed to be here at this party? Is my family supposed to be here at this party? I go because I want to have community. I want to be with my people and whatever tribe they are. And that's what I love about this foundation is that they host all kinds of workshops that I have gone to too, you know, earring making classes and this. But really the Christmas party for all of them was, I think it was a Toys for Tots thing, really made me say, do I not belong in my native culture because I am in a different socioeconomic class? And right after I have that thought, I say, no, natives can be successful. Natives can have money. Natives can be in any socioeconomic class. And it, in a way, having Toys for Tots at this Christmas party then made me mad because it's just assuming. And then I saw that Toys for Tots was also at a Christmas party for the Chief Seattle Club, which makes more sense because that's like a homeless kind of nonprofit that helps Native people who are in homelessness, and makes a little more sense. But this is just a Christmas party for the Native people in Seattle. You know, no matter what your tribe, no matter what it is, come and celebrate Christmas with us. And let me tell you, that turkey was off the hook. It was so good. It was a delicious dinner. It was so much fun. And it just made me feel like, oh, should I be here in attendance or should I be here as volunteer? Which was interesting because my cousin on my mother's father's side, so her white side, was there. And he is like as white as you can get, like red hair, just McKinney, like super white. And then and he was there with his daughter as a volunteer. And when he saw me, he said, "Oh, are you guys here volunteering?" I said, "No, we're here just to enjoy ourselves." And then on the other side, I had a cousin who I'm the same amount of related to on my mom's mother's side, the Hayward side. And they got to meet, which was super cool. It was like my two identities coming together. But I just was like, am I supposed to be here? And I realize every time I go into a Native space, I oftentimes feel this, where when I almost feel like I can be more confident about my nativeness in white spaces than I can be confident about my Simpsonness in Simpson or other Native spaces. And that's a little effed up, I think. And I'm having some feelings about that. And that's what I wanted to share with you, is that this mixed identity is a continued journey. And I continue to balance my identities and what I'm allowed to be and what I'm allowed to be part of and who gets to define that and how do I get to define that. And I will say that, I want to be, I feel like it's my, this is going to sound really arrogant, I think, because it's sounding arrogant in my head, is that I want to be in Native spaces and show other Natives that they can be successful, right? That they can make it through the white spaces and that they can navigate that into success. And they don't have to give up their nativeness to be successful, because the hard part of being quote unquote successful in our culture is that you really, there's only one way to be successful, and that is the white way. There is no other way. And I would even say that, like, artists that come through, even like hip hop, for example, like you have hip hop artists that come through and you can say that's not the white way. But I would say that the majority of super, like, uber successful hip hop artists, the majority of their audience is white and the money comes from white. And that's just like the power and the money has resided in whiteness. And so to take a part of that success that you have to learn to navigate these white spaces. But as we learn to navigate them, we can continue to hold on to our own culture, and nobody can take that from us. And that is why, that's one reason I want to do this podcast. And I'm trying to figure out how I can do this in other ways of bringing forward more positive images of Natives. And I think the Native Pride Project by Lucas Brown Eyes is someone who's doing something very intelligent about that, but just giving Native children the ability to see successful Natives means that I still get to be in those spaces, that I still get to go to these Christmas dinners, and I shouldn't be ashamed of my success, though I am constantly, I live with that shame a lot. And I'm trying to figure out ways that I can take the shame of my success and my privilege and use that in a positive way. And not only my white privilege, but the privilege that comes from being comfortable in a socioeconomic way, and how I haven't figured out, and I have to be honest, it's really hard when you have a 4 and a 2-year-old and it's winter and all you're doing is getting sick all the time. But yeah, so I do belong in Native spaces, and if people like me belong in Native spaces and should be comfortable there, even if we're not the people Toys for Tots are for. And I can find ways to work around that. And I don't need to be a volunteer and a visitor to those spaces. I can belong in those spaces. And if you hear it in my voice, I'm really trying to accept that. And a lot of times I feel like a visitor in those spaces, and that I should be a volunteer in those spaces, and that I don't belong because of my successes in the white world. And then in my privileges and those things, I shouldn't be able to have I don't know. It's the opposite of what I was talking about last episode, where it's just like I have so many positives, and I can have them both, and I felt very strong about that, and then I have different experiences, and I question whether I'm allowed to be comfortable and accepted in certain spaces. And I guess that's what I want to share, is that those questions keep coming up. Even though some days I feel really confident in my identity as a Simpson woman, and as a mother, and as those things, there are other times I feel very uncomfortable in my identities. There are times that I don't feel like I belong. And so anyway, the journey is there, and I am so excited about this episode, you guys. It is dropping on Christmas because I decided you will want something to listen to. All the other podcasts are not being made. And our guest said he'd actually listen to it with his family on Christmas. So I'm really excited about this. This is my guest is a really amazing gentleman. My first guest, I did not know before I met, but he is very charming and was such a joy to talk to. His name is Casey Wong. And he was seriously just a delight. I think we could have talked for hours and hours on end, but we got kicked out of the conference room we were using, and we just had to stop. So it might sound a little abrupt at the end, but he was so delightful. And I think I might want to get his family is listening, no brother and sister of Casey Wong, I might be coming to you, because I think it would be really fun to get another perspective of a whole family in the way that we got that. I think that's the coolest thing about mixed identity, is you can identify differently than your brothers and sisters. So with that, we're going to go to a quick ad break, enjoy our sponsors, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday if you celebrate, if not, Happy New Year. And we will be coming back in 2020 with some great episodes. We might be on a slightly different schedule, but stay tuned to the Instagram and the website, and you will be able to know when the next episode drops. I'll keep you up to date.
Yeah. Well, Anka told me about what you were doing with your kids and trying to get them more involved in your heritage.
Yeah.
That, you know, that pushed a button on me. I was like, oh, I would probably like to talk to her about all of this.
Yeah, cool. No, it's really important, because I feel like I don't have any, I mean, white heritage, because I was raised Christian, and then I'm like not religious. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm Hindu by default now.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And you've listened to some of them, he says?
Yeah. Yeah, super interesting. Especially, I listened to the first one with your sister. And I found a lot of kinship with it, because my older sister and I have a lot of the similar experiences, have made meaning of those experiences in similar ways. Mm-hmm. And I've done a fair amount of work. Like, she's a therapist. We've both been in therapy forever, probably in it for 8 years or something. I also was in grad school for counseling psychology before I came to Amazon.
Oh, wow. How did you end up doing business stuff at Amazon?
Yeah, so strange. Well,
my mom is like, Ankit's been so good for you. I was like, or all the years of therapy and medication that I'm on. I don't know, Mom.
Maybe both. Maybe not mutually exclusive.
No.
Yeah.
Well, he helps me, definitely has helped me become a better person. But so that's interesting. Therapy.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. But your identity plays such a big role, and I'm assuming you're close to my age, but like, you didn't talk about it when you were a kid, right? Like,
it wasn't. So here's how it looked for me. So what I was about to mention is my sister and I, we present similarly. The world kind of looks at us the same way. Yeah. When we walk around, people think we're brother and sister. My brother presents or is seen by the world as a white man.
Okay.
And he kind of identifies as one, like a white man with Chinese heritage.
Yeah.
And then I have a sister who's adopted Chinese.
Oh.
So it's a really interesting mix in my, like, atomic family.
I think I need to get them all on.
Yeah.
They're almost all in the area.
Yeah, really, really interesting. They all are around here, except for my sister who just moved to New York. But I guess I'm third generation Chinese American.
Okay.
So my grandparents moved in the 40s. From Guangzhou, it's like southern China, and that was like during the revolution.
Oh, wow.
And my dad had a very much like child of immigrants kind of experience, raised with a really strong identity as a Chinese American. His parents, my grandparents, stayed really tight in their Chinese community, which is hard to believe because they're in Tucson, Arizona.
Oh, yeah, that is.
And I didn't even know that there was one. But they went to like just a Cantonese-speaking church. Yeah. All their friends only spoke Cantonese. And then, as was the story, especially in the 50s and 60s, and in many ways today, there's a lot of pressure to assimilate.
Oh, yeah.
So apparently teachers, like grade school teachers, approached my grandparents and told them, like, you have to stop speaking Cantonese to them altogether because they're behind in school.
Which is such just lies. Anyways, with that, we're going to talk more on that.
Yeah.
It's the same assimilation. I see people continue to do it. Like, friends of Onkits, right? Like Indians who have just moved here, and they choose.
Especially with kids.
It's safer, right? Yeah. It's like they will only speak English to the. I was like, no, Onkit only speaks Hindi. Like that's it. And I try and sound really bad. But the only one who corrects me is Rihan, our 4-year-old, goes, you're not pronouncing that right.
is she right?
Yeah, no, he will tell me. He's like, Mom, that's not how you say it. And he like knows.
I'm really excited that it sounds like you're raising your kids to be engaged in their kind of diversity of heritage.
Yes.
And not from what I gathered with your conversations with your sister, it sounded like you raised them to not think about it as a dichotomy or as a mutually exclusive identity.
No.
And that's something that you probably worked for, is my guess.
Yeah.
That's something that I've had to develop on my own as well.
Well, and I think that's a good place of any to say this is Mixed Identity, the podcast where we talk to people who have these complicated identities and histories that even come from our grandparents and our great-grandparents and parents and how all that builds into who we are and identify as. And I like to... Oh, I'm your host, Heather Puri. Hopefully you recognize my voice, but maybe this is your first time listening because you're friends with Casey Wong, our guest today, who is my very first person I don't know. personally, and I'm so excited, but I'll let you introduce yourself a little, whatever, however you want, and then you can start with the question of how do you identify?
Yeah. So I'm born and raised here in Seattle, Washington, and I crossed Heather because I work with her husband. And we have an incredibly diverse team, and I've had really, really interesting conversations with Asian Americans and African Americans on the team, and then also a bunch of expats from other countries. And Ankit walked into one of these conversations and said, oh, you should talk to my wife.
Yeah.
And as far as how I identify, my dad's family is Chinese. My last name's Wong, as you probably caught. I identify primarily as an Asian American. And we're going to talk about that, I guess.
Yeah. So...
But the second part of the question was, how does the world perceive
you? Yeah, how typically have you been received?
Yeah.
And I'd like to talk a little more about how you have come to that identity, because your dad is Chinese, American, was raised here his whole life.
Uh-huh.
In Tucson?
In Tucson, Arizona.
I love Tucson, man. I went to U of A for 1 year.
Yeah. Oh, you did? That's where he went.
Yeah, it's a great school. I was in an acting program.
Okay.
And then they were like, oh, you're not good at acting. And I was like, thank you. That's so true. Greatest thing that happened to me in my life. I was not supposed to be an actress.
Good to hear that at 19 instead of 28.
Yeah, exactly. And so I went on to do directing, playwriting. Also really useful. But Tucson's great.
Yeah.
Oh, it is a Chinese. But they do. In Phoenix, there's an amazing Japanese community there. That's like, and a lot of the people were in the internment camps there. They have a very, the Asian Americans, I think, in the middle of the country have such an interesting story. But why do you identify more as Asian American?
Yeah.
And it could get into like how you're received by others, but is there like, I have a theory that whichever parent is more involved, that's where you get your identity from. And it's usually the mom. So when I heard you had a white mom, I was like, oh that's weird.
Yeah. So I would chalk it up to two reasons. The first is externally and how like my worlds have received me in your language. Yeah. Generally, like people have expressed a lot of curiosity about my racial heritage because I don't present really clearly.
Like, you're very ambiguous.
I have a darker skin tone. I have more like almond eyes, but some very much not Asian features otherwise. Mm.
Like a beard.
I have red in my beard. Both those things strike against my
Asian-ness.
Presenting Asian. So, I mean, it's very common for people to ask the poor question. So, what are you?
Do you get offended by that question?
I'm not easily offended, okay. But I'm also pretty quick to kind of use it as a coaching moment.
Yes, good for you.
Oh, so you're asking about my racial heritage?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh yeah. I'm like, oh, that's a good way to ask it.
Yeah.
I say that my mom is white, they would be like, oh, I mean, I know that you're not. That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking what else.
Yeah.
So the second piece is that my family system, like my dad is a louder figure in the family, takes up more space than my mom generally. Yeah. And he's the firstborn son of Chinese parents, which is a big deal.
I can't believe he got to marry a white woman, really.
That's a whole conversation we can have. That was met with a lot of resistance. My dad's family, like many Asian immigrant families, is super, super tight, has a very highly developed sense of family and family loyalty and honor, family honor. That was passed down to my dad, that he passed down to us. And he talked about our Asian heritage often. And when we had like family reunions, they were, you know, with the matriarch and patriarch of the family, on my dad's side, my Amma, which is Cantonese for father's mother, and my Aye, which is Cantonese for
my theory. Like, whoever is more, like, the more intense figure in the, and like makes a point of like, you're gonna have this heritage in your life. Yeah. Is so my theory is proving out, at least with so far.
the flip side of that was that my grandmother, my mom's mom, passed away before I was born, and my mom's dad was not really present. I'd only really met him a few times in my life. And as is the case with a lot of like white America that is not like children of immigrants, they don't have a developed sense of white identity. They just kind of consider it as the sea they're swimming in.
Yeah.
Without a great perception of it. So I think my mom, she didn't even say anything about her Germanic or Irish heritage or English heritage, which...
That was my dad. Like, we know nothing really about being Irish.
Yep. Until like her and her sisters, when I was a teenager, went to Germany to visit my cousin who was studying over there.
Ah.
And they came back with, you know, their maiden name is Bremer, all those women. So they got to go
find
to that. Yeah, and all that. And they came back with Steins. And I have such a clear vision that our, like, formal family room or living room. Which one's the formal one? The living room?
We have a tiny townhome that only has one living space.
So imagine suburban America.
Yeah.
The room that nobody goes into.
Yes, that one. Yes. Yeah,
that has all the family heritage stuff. It's where your mom would keep the silver if there is silver in the house.
Yeah.
This room had like Chinese scroll art in it. It had probably 5 or 6 Chinese art pieces on the walls. And then there was some like kind of heritage items from our family on the mantle. And I have a clear memory of my mom coming back from Germany and physically sliding over these like Chinese pieces and putting these steins on the mantle. And even then I remember thinking as like a 16-year-old, like, I think it's too late.
I personally have a feeling that it's never too late. Because I think a lot of people fell into assimilation by fear or their parents. Like, one of the inspirations for this podcast is I had a friend, and she's white, Japanese, and Puerto Rican, but her parents are so assimilated. Like, she identified white. We've known each other since we were like 15. She identified white most of her life, and then later she identified kind of as Japanese, and right now she's just like, I am like a Hispanic, I'm a Latina, and she's learning Spanish, and she's that. Anka thinks it's because she gets benefits from being Latinx.
You mean like it could be some cultural currency, or do you mean like more tangible
stuff? She works
stuff
here, and they're supposed to, like, the best at Amazon is the Latinx at Amazon, and there's just like more, and she's like a developer, and being a Latina developer holds more cachet than being like a Japanese developer.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But I think he goes, and I'm like, I don't care if that's why she started it. She has a right to learn Spanish, and she has a right to know about being Puerto Rican. Like, it's her story. I've never always identified as Simpson. And there are times when I've like pushed that part of myself like away and like existed as a white person.
Yep.
So we all, and then right now, like, it's just so important. And I think it's because I have kids and I'm like, you are not going to just be little Indian kids. Like, you're going to be, you know, Simpson. And my family, because like your father, like the dominant voice was my mother and my grandmother. It's a matriarchal society, like Simpsons.
Yeah.
And I was just like, my aunties were like, oh, she can't marry an Indian man. Like, she will lose her culture, because it's such Hinduism and
it's dominant.
It's dominant,
it's very
right?
Strong, yeah. And then widely received.
Yeah, and I'm like, no, that's not gonna happen. They also, some of my family thinks he's Arab and like had the very stereotypical misconceptions of Arabs, and I'm like, oh, different part of the world.
Well, let's talk about this for a minute, because you know, you kind of you pointed out the fact that my dad is a firstborn Chinese son, must have had a interesting experience marrying outside of his heritage, and that was very much the case. So when I think the narrative that we're so often given about stories of like racial conflict in the U.S. Are from like whites rejecting other cultures, but it happens every direction.
Yeah, it does.
We could say some things about it all being based around white supremacy, but
yes.
In an immigrant culture that's trying to sustain itself through, especially generationally, there's a lot of pressure put on kids to make sure that they have friends and especially romantic partners and eventually spouses that are inside the cultural boundaries that they exist in. So my mom, Patty Bremer, didn't really qualify. It caused significant rifts in the family.
For the Chinese side?
For the Chinese side.
Mm-hmm.
Not for the white side at all. As the story goes, my white family was like, he seems like a great guy. I hope all the best for you. Apparently, there was a word of warning somewhere in there about like, you might have a hard time being received by them because you're not Chinese, which is her experience.
I got a similar warning from my mom about like dating Ankit.
And I mean, my mom has even passed that down to like some of my siblings have dated outside of an American culture. One of them dating a Persian for a while, and I heard my mom give the same piece of advice, and I found that just so interesting that she passed the same advice down that she got from her parents, even though she went against it.
It's hard, though. I think, well, I don't have that. People always want to be like, so, like, was it, like, so dramatic? And basically, no. Ankit, the drama happened in Ankit's own mind.
Yeah.
And the minute his parents, like, if I made his mom, I like to say, is the beginning of feminism in India. Like, she worked the whole life. She had a love marriage. Back in the day, she was older than her husband. Back in the day, like she actually,
this is like in the 70s or 80s or something too.
Yeah, right. And like she had a higher role in, like, they did the same work, but she was like supervisor of like her husband, like, and he, yeah. So
whoa.
Yeah, like everything about her, like, I don't think I could be married to an. He's not a normal Indian dude. Like, I don't know how closely, but he like cooks and he cleans and he's had to learn all those things because culturally that's not what happens. You know,
it made him an outlier before he met you already.
Yeah,
right?
I think he was an outlier, and so that's why it was. And then his mom was just like, oh, as long as he's happy.
Yeah.
And like, why didn't he? Because we dated for like 2 years, and they knew nothing about me. And and then finally there was like some conversation of some bad matched marriage. Like, and he's like, wouldn't it be nice if I knew someone I could get married to? I think I know someone.
He's playing the long game.
Yeah. Right. And, but yeah, so we didn't have that drama. Everybody wants us to, but his mom is just the neatest. I want to know more Hindi just so I can talk to her. But we're here to talk about you. And so you're so good at like talk. But so how has the world received you? Are you received at, you said ambiguous, but what is the weirdest thing you've ever been asked? Are you this for you? Or like the one that struck you as like.
I as the weirdest.
Yeah.
Actually, I get mistaken as Indian all the time. South Asian, generally.
Really?
And Middle
Eastern.
Yeah,
I could see that.
Yeah.
Oh, I could see that, yeah.
Not, maybe not, I don't want to use the word pure, but like not an unmixed.
Yeah.
But their last guess is typically Chinese. Now, it's worth...
Yeah, I would. Like, to me, the first time I saw your picture, I thought you might be Latinx of some mix.
Yep, and people think that too. So, I mean, to show my hand here, I think for my developing extroverted ego, I took the attention I received that of people's curiosity about my like racial heritage as like a positive, like oh, like I don't have to ask for this attention.
You get you're different. You get to be.
I get to be different.
I think I was the same way. Like I enjoy. There are people who like to be. Who aren't as extroverted or like don't, I mean, I don't so much anymore, but like that attention and like being interesting and different from like everyone else.
Yes. Just for sake of it not being what the norm is.
Yeah.
All else being held equal, I'd consider that like a positive thing, especially in like a pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a pretty white bread kind
of. Yeah, well, you grew up
bland.
In Seattle.
Yeah, I grew up in the suburbs.
So, in the suburbs of Seattle.
About 10 miles from here.
And
it was
so
predominantly white.
White.
It was probably like, it's very different now in like the Redmond Bellevue area with like the tech boom that's happened in the last 15 years. But when I was growing up,
it was Boeing.
It was, yeah. So it's probably 90%+ white. And I grew up in Redmond right when Microsoft was moving in.
Okay.
So that changed the landscape quite a bit, but that people were still very curious about.
Yeah, because you still don't look like you're not, you don't look Chinese, you don't look Japanese, you don't look like.
Yeah, so I could make for a great spy. I've really benefited from the
ambiguity.
Do you
ever get mistaken as white?
No. So the way I joke about it is that like I'm beige enough to get by. Like people.
People. I used to be before I moved to Seattle.
Like, I get to... I actually have a little bit of guilt about this privilege I carry or maybe how I use it, but I get to engage in conversations around race with anybody, and I feel pretty free to do so without the burdens of what a white man would carry.
Yes.
And I get access that a white man has. Like, I can count on one hand in my lifetime the number of times somebody said anything disparaging or I felt like something was happening because I presented not white.
Do you think, so this is, my eldest brother is very similar and you actually like, could be like cousins, like in the way that you kind of present. And like it's because I think in a lot of ways he's a physician and what he does in his life and like the areas. We grew up in low economic class, so there he could fit in with all the Hispanic, all the Mexicans and all that. But as he has progressed and went to like a really great engineering school and then decided he wanted to become a doctor and went to the best medical schools and then did his residency, like he became whiter and whiter the more education he got. Like even though his skin didn't become white, he doesn't. It was very interesting to me because I've seen people discriminate against him and my mother. Like, I've witnessed it, but he doesn't see it that way. And he kind of was like, his was, I don't remember what he said exactly, but he's just, wherever he is, he fits in.
Yes. So I've gotten that benefit. It's awesome traveling.
Yes.
That's like I won't put any caveats on that. Like, I get to not look over my shoulder like somebody with blonde hair has to look. Look over my shoulder, what I mean is like stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
Especially for folks looking to swindle tourists.
Yes.
I'd actually say that the experiences that I had negatively around it are all around people denying me a racial heritage other than white.
Oh.
So like...
Who can you tell me a story about that? Like, yeah. Who has done that in your life?
I'm going to out you, Oscar, who is my and Ankit's coworker.
Okay.
Who's a... He and I actually present similarly, except that he has a very lovely Spanish accent.
All right.
He's Venezuelan. And he said, like, oh, you're white, man. You're white. Like, why do you... What are you talking about? You're white. And I was like, I'm not... Oscar, I'm not white. Why do you keep saying that?
Yeah.
But he meant culturally.
Yeah, like culturally.
You move around like this. The time that really got under my skin was a few years ago with actually my white uncle. And he's married to my Chinese aunt.
Okay.
And he... he said authoritatively, like, oh, you're a white man, Casey. Like, you know how to, like, walk and talk like a white guy, and you get to move around the world like a white guy. You're a white guy.
Yeah, but I know I am actually having so much trouble getting white presenting men,
yeah,
cisgender men, to be on my podcast.
Really?
Because they're like, I don't feel like I can talk about it because I'm cisgender, I present as white, and I'm a man.
Yeah.
And
like, throw a Christian in the mix.
Yeah, yeah.
And straight. And you're exactly. Like, I'm the guy who should be listening and not talking. Right,
exactly.
Now.
And that's what they feel like.
Yeah.
And, but I actually think that they're being, that is being stolen from them. Like, one of the men I talk to is, yes, like, it's not right. Like, you get to be who you are. You are who you are, even if you can.
Yeah.
We code switch, right? And I get to code switch as I can be a white person. I can go and
yes,
code switch into, yes, my other identity.
Uh-huh.
And that because I have white privilege, I have to honor that white privilege and I have to use my white privilege to benefit those who cannot. So I've been in like hiring situations or things where bias has come up. Like, that's my job to stand, yeah, up and be like, what if you found out I was a porn star before I started working here? Like, would you deny me the job? And they're like, well, and I'm like, you gotta consider, like, you know, sex work for some people is the only way they can get by. But that's my job. As a white presenting woman, I can go into spaces and stand up and be, yeah, like, you cannot act like this. But no one gets to take your culture for you. Oscar and uncle, I'm coming for you. But no, I see that because you can, you have the privilege, but you can't have your culture taken. And that's my friend who's now like embracing her Puerto Rican culture.
Mm-hmm.
No one can be like, no, you can't do it because you're 35 when you started it. No. Like, I think about Native people who are like, well, you know, my grandmother really assimilated because it was safe. And so I don't know anything. Go learn. You can learn. Like, that's yours. It's your identity.
Well, and especially with a heritage, if you have a Native heritage, yes, it's like, well, part of my not identifying that way is because it was forced.
Yeah.
So if you're talking about, like, people getting taken from their homes and trained to be white.
Yeah. Like, that was...
And then now you're blaming that, like, on the future generations. So there's a lot, mm-hmm, of work to be done and a lot of exploration.
Yeah.
And...
what have you done to embrace your Chinese heritage and hold on to that? It sounds like it was part of your growing up.
Yeah.
But is there anything that, like, when you, if you ever, like, have nieces or nephews or children to, yeah, pass on to, that you'll, like...
Yeah, so this is something that I'd be really curious to hear you talk about, yeah, with mixed kids. Because my brother and sister both have kids.
Yeah.
My sister's kid looks very much like my sister and I, and my brother's kids are blonde-haired and blue-eyed.
Yeah.
With the last name Wong. And I'm really curious how my brother's going to raise them to talk about their heritage.
Mm-hmm.
My sister's definitely going to be doing it very actively.
Yeah.
But as far as how I do it, like, I'm very curious about the stories that I don't know about that are part of who I am. So, I got here to this conference room, yeah, in Seattle,
yeah,
through a series of kind of unfathomable events and stories that will go untold if you don't ask for them.
Yeah.
So I've asked my, like, ama, tell me about growing up in Canton,
yeah,
about being the 13th daughter of
She's still alive?
She is.
Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah. Get all her stories, yeah, from her. Yes.
Yeah. My dad had this amazing idea that I'm very glad he followed through with doing video interviews with all of the kids and her. And we have all those now.
That's so great of your dad.
Yeah. You know, and hearing these stories about her, like, fleeing to Saigon during, like, the Sino-Japanese Wars and going back and forth, and how her sisters looked after her when her, like, my great-grandparents, like, we can't have another kid, so they're going to give her away to relatives, which is culturally something.
That's what Simpsons do. Yeah. Yeah.
Which sounds actually pretty great.
Yeah. No.
A lot better than just straight adoption, right?
Yeah. No, there's a lot of... I have aunts who are just like, they're my aunts, but they're like...
aunties kind of aunts. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So, like, there's these stories of, like, my great aunts going against the will of my great grandparents and saying, like, no, she's our sister. She's going to be raised as our sister, not our cousin. And we'll take on the burden of raising her. And my ama gave me this sweetest gift. She's in a retirement home. She's 90, just turned 91. So I guess she turns 92 pretty soon here. So they gave her a necklace upon her graduation from nursing school, and it has all of their names stamped on it in like Chinese characters. And she gave me that necklace.
Aww.
So I now have that, like, sitting next to a picture of her on her wedding day, like, on my mantle, and that's her story, and that is my story, because that is how I'm sitting here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my fear with the way in the States we're so forward-looking and so great about, like, this land is about possibility, not about what you're coming from.
Yeah.
And that also comes at great loss.
Yes.
So you have all these communities coming from all over the place, coming to the States, who, particularly through changes in language and culture, lose touch with those roots because they're grasping after the possibility of another life.
Yes.
Or fleeing a bad situation. But really, it sounds like you have a similar situation where there's a sense that, like, man, if I don't ask these stories to be told, they're just going to be gone.
They're going to be gone. And we're having to refine, like, that's exactly what is going to happen. And, like, in our culture, like, we've had to refine our songs, and a lot of it's really interesting because a lot of the influence on United States Simpsons comes from Tlingit and Haida tribes, where our tribe is originally from BC. And, like,
oh, interesting.
So it is, but, like, we have to rediscover that, and it's been hard because it's been beaten out of, like, my grandmother went to boarding school and, like, had to, like, if she spoke, they put, like, a lye in her mouth if she spoke Malayalam.
Yeah, my dad got soap.
Yeah, ask him what kind of soap, because I recently found out it wasn't, like, nice dish soap.
Yeah,
it was, like,
something harsher.
Yeah, and which is hard, and it's safe, and you see, that's why I want to get some people on here who are, like, first-generation American whose parents chose assimilation, because even though it's not soap, they're doing it because it's safe, right? That's my theory, is that, like, you can change the way you eat, you can change the way you talk, but you can't change your skin color in this country. So change as much as you can so you can fit in and you can be safe. Because brown skin is cost you enough in this country that you need to, like, assimilate to be safe.
Yeah, so I've been having really interesting conversations. My dad said the funniest thing last year. So my Chinese sister, the one who's adopted, and my dad and my mom and I were out at Din Tai Fung, which is our, like, little tradition when everyone's in the same town. And I just had this troubling experience with my uncle, and I was talking it out. And my dad's, you know, my sister's talking about the experience of dating guys who just had the yellow fever, as it said, right?
Those are the most disgusting.
Yeah, really troubling. And my dad's like, you know, sometimes I look in the mirror, and I'm like, oh, God, I'm not white.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And I talked to him about that, and he said, like, you know, his parents, my grandparents, chose to assimilate because it presented the most opportunities to him.
Absolutely.
And he's been quite successful, and he attributes a lot of that to the ability to move around the world in this dominant culture.
Yeah.
So I think he got to the position, I wonder when this was for him, but he started his own business when I was a little kid, so he would have been in his, like, probably late 30s, early 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to that office, and he had a lot of Chinese decor up. I mean, his business is called Peter Wong and Associates.
Yeah.
So it has a Chinese presentation just in the name of it. But he put up a lot of this around the office. And it made me curious, like, when did you start owning this publicly? you know, because you had some stuff in the house, but outside the house, the only identifier other than your skin was a Chinese necklace he wore. That was just his name.
Yeah, I wonder, that would be a good question to ask him too. Yeah. Is like, because I also think that is part of a mixed identity, because he has to juggle, like, he has to juggle his American identity with his Chinese identity.
Yeah, and maybe he had to get the power and influence to feel confident doing it without it being like a, did you see at Peter's desk? There's like
But do you have anything on your, like, you guys have the smallest desk in the world. You don't have anything anything.
Yeah, this place is not a great example just because they also move everyone's desks like every 6 months. So
why?
It's common for people to leave their stuff, including your husband, stuff in boxes underneath their desk.
Yes.
Because they're not going to bother because they're just going to get moved again.
It's probably the really cute pictures of our family. Yeah. Him. But
I did see some of those.
Yeah.
But I do have stuff like at home. I have... I have these, like, I've found out some more of my mom's heritage and my white side. Like, apparently my great-great-grandfather was the youngest state senator in U.S. history at the time. He was, like, 23, senator of Idaho. And I have a picture of him, like, out west with a revolver on his hip.
I love that.
So I have that on the opposite side of the hall is pictures of my, so my grandparents are in an arranged marriage. And there's pictures of their wedding and my... the only picture I have, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, on the opposite wall of the hallway, and then...
I did that in our first apartment here. Yeah. I had, like, all this, like, East Indian, like, from India art, and then I had all this Sicilian art, and I actually put them East and West, so...
That's a little nerdy.
It is. I've also been listening, like, nonstop to the impeachment stuff, and I'm, like, really into it right now today, because it's all, like, wonky, nerdy law stuff. So I'm a nerd.
Yeah, but I'm really excited for your kids because...
tell me why.
Let me tell you why. It's because I was raised to think about my race primarily as mutually exclusive. And I remember, you know, I mentioned that my dad kind of took up more space and he was a louder person in the partnership with my mom. But I remember every so often my mom being like, remember you're white too. But there is that underdeveloped sense of white culture and then the things that are going on in my family system that kind of, I looked at that and was like, eh.
Yeah.
But I'm Chinese. Like that's what has its roots. And it really sounds like you're raising your kids to think, like, I can be all of these things.
Yeah.
And it's fluid and you have the right to engage it how you want to and when you want to.
Yeah.
And that's on the kids' terms.
Absolutely.
With you there to guide, as opposed to it being like a...
And I think I do that more so because, like, I am very sad that I don't have... Like, I don't have my grandmother. She's not... Mm. Like, she passed away when I was 19, and I was just, like, too young and self-centered to, like, have, like, asked her the questions. Yeah. And luckily some people have, and there are these great YouTube videos of her, like, speaking in Shmaliak and, like, because she was one of the last native speakers, but...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, like, so I just see... Like, I can see my culture... Like, it almost died, but we have people who are saving it. Like, but it's different now because we've had... Like, there are kids who are growing up learning to speak it, but they're learning from... People like, well, not like me because I don't really know that much, but I just don't want my kid. I like am jealous of people who have. It sounds like maybe you had more like of that Chinese. It was always a part of our life, but I just wish because the government took it away and because part of my tribe converted to Christianity, they had to give a lot of it away and like to be Christian because all the totem poles and all those things. Yeah. It's devil worship, which it wasn't.
This is a wandering conversation.
No, that's what it is.
One question I have for you is a sense of like being enough in one identity. I think one of the things that is going to be a regular theme in this, if it isn't already, is that sense of like, oh, I'm not Chinese enough.
I'm not.
Or like your kids aren't Indian enough
to
hang out with their like Indian American friends.
Yeah.
And that's a sense that I very much had growing up. When I had Chinese friends growing up, but when I went to their house, they were speaking Mandarin or Cantonese, and I was like, well, shit, I can't keep up here.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had
like a much more direct connection. You know, they're flying back to China twice a year to visit family. Yeah. They're like eating Chinese all their meals. They still had plastic on the furniture like my grandmother had. And I didn't feel like I had the cultural like currency to keep up with that. But it seemed to question that identity for me as a Chinese American. So I ended up like two of the closest friendships that I still have from, let's say three from my teenage years are not necessarily Chinese, but they're all mixed.
Yeah. And I think my closest friends from growing up, and I can also count the mixed people I knew like on one hand. And so I think Seattle's a little different. I think Seattle's always had a little more mixing, especially with Asian and white. But like, yeah, no, those are the people who could understand. I remember the friend I was talking about who someone approached her and was like, who are you? Are you going to marry someone like you? And she's like, there's no one else like me but my brother.
Yeah.
Like, there's no one else like me but my brother. But yeah, I always feel like I went to dance group last night and we've been dancing with them for like a year. And I continue to not. I know everybody at that table does not feel native enough.
When you go back to, it sounds like you're going back and connecting to this community, or trying to, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I imagine that there's some folks in there that have more direct ties to the culture.
Oh, yeah. The ones who come from Alaska and come from the reservation and come from that. But I think even then, they don't. I truly believe that we all don't feel native enough because we've all had to rediscover our identity. Mm. And that's why I want my kids to have it from, like, the day they were born. Like, especially, like, and we'll go back to India on a regular basis. Yeah. And we should go back to the reservation. We should. Yeah. But it's not, it's like 2 hours away, but it's so expensive because you can't get there except on a boat or a plane. And
where is it?
It's by Ketchikan.
Okay.
It's a little island.
You get to Ketchikan in 2 hours?
Yeah. It's so close. Yeah. No, it's not like Southeast Alaska is like people think, oh, Alaska. And I'm like, I'm not from that part.
It's like Portland.
It's pretty much Portland. Yeah. You could drive there. You have to take a ferry over. But it's like driving to Vancouver and taking a ferry over.
Yeah.
I think being mixed, it is like, I think we're put into a box of saying you have to be one thing. Like you have to be, like you have, when you check, you don't get to, only recently is there a mixed box. But I don't even like that because you're mixed and I'm mixed, but we're totally different kinds of mixed.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how much our stories and our feelings would, I think they're relatable, but they're all so individual.
Yeah.
Like, no, I don't think any mixed kid, even in families, has the same story and has the same identity. So it's just, it's so limiting. But because we like to have boxes in our culture and we like to understand people, when people are racially ambiguous, it's hard for people. Like, that's why I think Oscar's like, no, you have a great job at Amazon. Like, you talk like you talk. Like, you're a white dude.
Yeah.
You're white because of all these other things, even though you are not white.
Right.
You're not white, Casey.
And then what that does to us, mixies, is that it forces us, especially as we're developing our senses of self, to comply with the same boxes.
Yeah.
So it's likely until we've developed a better sense of ourselves.
Lots and lots of therapy.
Where we can, a hell of a lot of therapy to be like, oh, I don't need to. I don't need to do that.
And so we can come back in like 18 years and check in with my kids to see if I hopefully gave them any, because I don't want
my
them.
My calendar's up to date. Go ahead and block it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. but no, I am. And I think that people who are having like mixed kids, like if you, like your sister, right? Like is going to take the time, but not everyone. And then what I really see is like people who are having, like there's this wonderful white woman who has a daughter who's half Chinese and her husband's Chinese, and like same thing with your dad, was told, like spoke Cantonese until he was 5 and then went to school and was told you can't speak it, and so he works at Google and he like he seems like your dad, and like they were in a like they were talking, she's like, I need to realize my kids are like, she doesn't even see her kids as not white, like and she, because as a white person, like, you don't even...
And you said she has mixed heritage.
No, that she's white, but her kids are half it. She's married to a Chinese man.
Kids are mixed,
and so, but she... I don't know. Like, I think so much about this, and I just am like, ah, like, your kids are going to, like, you struggle so much with your identity as you are going through.
And they're going to be treated differently.
They're going to be treated differently. And when they get into school, like, they're going to be, because they're just, they're beautiful mixed girls, right? She's got two girls, and they're just beautiful, and they're going to be, it is going to be different. And I want my kids, having that understanding, I want my kids to, because they're mixed again. Now, the rest of my brothers and sisters married white people. One of my brothers married, like, the whitest looking Latina woman ever. So technically not, but their kids are, my sister's kids are like your brother's kids, like blonde hair, blue eyes. Yeah. And
well, I think about, this is a very quickly changing landscape.
Yeah, go ahead.
And you've probably seen that, like, in census results, the fastest growing racial demographic is mixed.
Yeah.
So that's you and me.
Yeah.
And in our 30s, we stood out a little bit more. In 2019, kids who are growing up right now are going to have a different experience.
Yeah.
When I was studying some of this stuff in grad school for counseling, there's just not much out there in literature on racial identity for mixed race kids. And that's just starting to change as of the last, like, 10 or 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, like, this has been work that people have been doing for a couple generations now, and in the States, and now, just now, people are like, oh, there's a whole group of folks who don't fit into these models, because we're saying, we're basically cutting these into different demographics into, like, neatish boxes.
Yeah.
And that's just going to continue to develop, and I think, and hope, that, especially in a liberal corner of the country like Seattle, our educational systems are going to be pushing a little bit harder on, like, a different attention to these kind of topics than what we were raised to
Well, that's actually, so in the little liberal bubble that Anke and I found called Hilltop Children's Children's Center, I think. They don't call themselves a preschool or a daycare, but it's amazing because they are trying, they're mostly white people, but they're trying, and I engage with them in that. Like, I make, and they are really welcoming, but they, so in, like, Rehan's class, they have a little boy whose parents are
these,
from...
Are these Hindi names?
Rehan and Mahir are Hindi names, yeah. They're actually... Oh, no, I love their names. Yeah, my feeling is they're beautiful. We don't have, like... I can't go find a Shmaliak name, right? Like, that's... Well, in Shmaliak names are very... Like, you have to be given. Yeah. It's very particular. But my feeling is, like, they need to have... that they need to have that identity. And I know a lot of Asian parents, like, are like, I just picked, like, the first white name I saw. Like, this is, like, Ethan, this young boy, his parents are both from China, and he's in Rehan's class. His name is Ethan, but it's because it kind of sounds like what his real name is.
Yes. That's the reason my grandparents took Walter and Jane, is because it sounded a little bit like their Cantonese name.
And I'm just like, no. Like, you are not... I have gotten to the point where I think assimilation is wrong. And I think assimilation is harmful. And this is, like... I hate when people are like, I worked in the arts forever. And they're like, we need people of color to come to the symphony and the ballet and the opera and Western theater. And I was like, you know they have their own art forms? Like, it's not like they don't participate in art. They're just not participating in your white art. Mm. And I'm just done. Like, that's one of the reasons I quit my job. I'm like, I'm tired of helping white people feel good about themselves by seeing plays about black people that no black people want to see because it doesn't represent their reality of, like, someone who can afford to come to the theater doesn't want to see a play about black people in the ghetto. They don't. They want to see themselves on stage. Mm-hmm. They want... The first time, this is something I'd like to ask you. The first time I saw myself represented in media, and it's not full because it was an Alaska Native kid. We're talking, this is just in the year. It's a PBS show that just came out. Like, I cried because I've never seen another Alaska Native in media ever.
Yeah.
But have you ever, like, seen yourself in media of some sort and just been like, oh.
Keanu.
Really? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Keanu's he's half Japanese. Yeah. But having a mixed Asian American person as, like, something to point at.
Yeah.
But for me, like, what I think about it in Asian American representation in media, mm-hmm. I think of an
emasculated male archetype.
I hate that too.
And it drove me nuts. I mean, who do we got to look to? I was thinking of little Asian American boys.
Yeah.
You have Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Who's the one who is in all the Lethal Weapon movies? There's a handful that you can look at and be like, oh, cool. But even that is like turned into a caricature.
Yep.
There wasn't a lot of complexity in Asian American characters until what really feels like the last few years.
Yeah, I was going to say, what do you think about Crazy Rich Asians?
I didn't personally like it, but there's a couple other...
What do you think of K-pop that has like incredibly... Like Asian men get to be hip and attractive now, which I love. I personally have felt that way. I grew up in a very... I grew up around a bunch of Asians.
Yeah.
And so I've always I worried I had yellow fever. I was like, is something wrong with me?
Oh,
I was like, oh no. But it's just those, my best friend was Korean and like everyone I grew up with was Filipino. And so the boys I grew up with were Asian boys. So
so you use that to make yourself,
get
yourself off the hook. I want you to be off the hook.
Well, I had a long conversation with a friend when I was getting serious with Ankit. I was like, am I just dating him because he's an Indian guy? And they're like, Heather, you're asking yourself this question, so probably not.
Yes.
But I was nervous. I was like, am I just fetishizing this? I was very worried.
That's a worthwhile question to ask yourself.
Yeah. I was like, is this just a fetish? Yeah. Am I oh, this cool foreign dude?
there's certain, I dated somebody who's like, oh man, I get a lot of cultural credibility for dating a not white guy. I mean, she said it with a good good self-deprecating tone of voice.
All right, good. You never know with white people.
but with Asian Americans in the media, Crazy Rich Asians came out and that got a lot of good attention. That's great.
Fresh Off the Boat.
Be My Maybe? Was that the... Yeah, with Ali Wong and Keanu's guest appearance. I thought that was great. That represented a bit more of an Asian American culture, whereas Crazy Rich Asians is predominantly an Asian culture.
Yes.
And then, I watched a movie that was really got its finger on my soft spot. It was called The Farewell.
I'll link to it and I'll look it up. But what was it that
It was just Asian Americans with complexity.
Awesome.
That was it. And you know, what was the Korean? There's a show called Lost you'll remember from 15 years ago, and that had a Korean.
So handsome.
Who is? I'll say, very handsome dude.
Yeah, very handsome dude. I know who you're talking about too. Yeah.
And what was remarkable to me is hearing my white female friends talk about being attracted to Asian men.
Oh, that's
I was,
good, yeah.
Yeah, growing up, all the girls I had crushes on the blonde-haired, blue-eyed dudes.
Yeah,
and I just kind of took that to mean, whatever.
No, I would be, my friends would make fun of me because I found, Asian men so attractive. They were like, what? And I was just, but I always have. And, I had a white girlfriend who ended up marrying, a half, maybe half Japanese or half Chinese man. And she's like, isn't it so funny that I ended up with an Asian man? I was like, dude, my man's from Asia. come on here. No,
yeah,
but
people don't really talk about India as Asian.
I know. But they don't here in this country. They don't think of India as part of Asia. But no, I think it is great to have that, to be seeing that representation of more complex Asian men and not just the big teeth and big glasses and the stereotype. It's like finally seeing some Native American representation, because she's just a young 6, 7, 8 year, I don't know, I'm really bad past 4 how old kids are, what they do, but to have someone who's somewhat like you. But I think I haven't watched Mixish, which I want to try.
I've never heard of that.
ABC. I only know about it because it's based off of the Blackish moms growing up, I guess. And my favorite, his name is Andrew T. He's a Chinese-American guy, and he has his podcast called Yo, Is This Racist? And he writes for the show, and he's really funny. You should check out Yo, Is This Racist? If you haven't. It's the best podcast ever, because
I want to go back to the name thing for a second.
Okay.
So I'm very thankful that I have a name that represents both my, Casey is my maternal grandmother's maiden name. Did I say that right? I think so. And then, of course, Wong is my dad's family's name, and I'm glad that my name gets to represent both parts of my heritage. And I wonder, with your kids having an Indian first name and an Indian last name, if you've had any thoughts about how their name identifies them, especially if their skin color. There was a thought.
They're two brown kids. One of my one looks just like my oldest brother. And then, are there people waiting? Yeah.
Right. Oh, actually, no. He just shook his head.
Okay.
So I think we're okay.
So I wanted them to have names that... So I'm Heather. I grew up Heather Beal, right? Mm. So I had no identifying... Like, I just... Beal is, like, German, which I'm not any German. Mm. And it's because my grandfather... So I had, like, nothing identifying me. And I wanted my kids to have that. Like, I didn't want them to be like, why are you a brown... Like, well, I met this woman. She's South Asian. She married a white dude. And they had a beautiful son who's Rehan's age and named him Nolan. And I was like, that poor brown kid's going to be so confused when he goes to school. And he's going to have the whitest freaking Nolan Law, his dad, like a white last name, a white first name. He's going to be really confused.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want my kids to be confused. So, and again, Simsia names are, there's only so many. Like, I don't have a
You don't have access to that.
You'd
feel like to honor that, you need to be given to the kids.
And it, not that it need, like it needs to be, like it's protocol. And so I have a name which is a child's name, but they're ancestral names and there's only so many of them. And the only person in my family my mom has two actually for some reason, but they have to be given in a very specific way.
Yeah.
And my name is Ama Gyatan Tuwalsk, which means very kind child of the higher up, but
it's not a name you'd assume as an adult.
Yeah, it's not a name. Okay. And I use it when I talk and introduce myself in Shmaliak, and like when I am with other Native people, I'll use that. Mm. But I just wanted them to have a name that people would not create dissonance with the world.
Yeah.
Like people are going to see my voice. Because even like when we go back to India, they're like,
oh. Their very existence might create some dissonance.
Yes, that's true. But I don't want their name in their face to create dissonance. That was my thought, but it will and they'll be different, but they even going back, they're like, oh, thank goodness they look like Indian kids.
Yeah.
In India they're like, oh, they don't look like white, because, and I want to be like, well, that's because I'm not 100% white, but in India I'm just white, like,
yeah,
and like
well,
white.
So this is one of the reasons I ask. My sister had her first son, this beautiful boy Samuel. And my sister and I read this book together, East of Eden. It's a famous Steinbeck book. And my favorite literary characters of all time are Samuel Hamilton in this book and Lee. Lee is a Chinese, I think he's an immigrant in the book. I don't think he was born in California. Mm-hmm. He's very Chinese character.
Yeah.
And I told Abby when we read the book together, I think I'd like to name a son Samuel. And she just went ahead and named her son Samuel. She was first to the punch. And I thought, well, I mean, I could name my kid Lee. And I stopped and thought, Lee Wong. Like, Lee's a white enough name if you have a white last name to get by. And have, like, nobody even thinks about it. You know, think General Lee.
Yeah.
But Lee Wong has a different ring to it.
It really does.
And I think of, like, that name on the top of a resume. Or what a teacher thinks when they call out roll call for the first time.
So we did a testing. You probably weren't on kids' team at the time. Like when we were pregnant with Mahir, we would bring in the names and find the whitest people on our teams and be like, how would you say this? And that's why we added an extra A to Mahir's name, because they weren't elongating the A.
Wait. You gave your kids' names to interviewees.
No, potential here, like on our teams, like while we were working, because I worked until after Mahir was born. And so
we would just
teammates, and be like, hey, how would you pronounce
this? I've identified you as the least culturally sensitive person on the team.
Well, we didn't say that. We were just like, hey. So I don't know. Yeah, it will be. We also, before our kids, thought we would end up living in India.
Yeah.
We thought we'd go back. And so to have that.
That's a whole different element to it.
Yeah. So I also am hoping it changes. Like, I'm also hoping that the things that I'm seeing, I'm hoping it won't be 100% change, but my kids are going to have a financial benefit that we never had. They're going to have, like, they're in a higher socioeconomic class. Yeah. Like, they're, like they're going to have people to help them through. And yes, on the resume, there will be those issues, but they're also going to have a better understanding of those. And it's not the same as, like, Shaniqua, right?
Yeah.
Like, there, I think an Indian name, depending on what they choose to do, doesn't carry the same...
Yeah,
I mean, as a predominant, like, if you can read a name and it's a black name, I think you get that more. And I know that Paul Beale, like, my brother's name, like, his name just reads really soft and easy. But I am hoping that it'll change in the fact that, like, at least where they will live, I'm hoping it won't affect them too much to have. And I just couldn't, I don't know. We did think of, like, oh, they could be, like, Siddharth and they could be Sid, or, like, I tried to find, like, a Indian name that was like Joe something, because my dad goes by Joe. But
yeah, I've been wondering, I've been observing my own presumptions about names.
Yeah,
I work at a company where there's 55,000 coworkers.
Yeah,
here in this neighborhood.
Yeah,
and another crazy, like 800,000 around the world. But I see people in our internal phone book that I need to work with. And especially, there's a lot of Indian folks who work here. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of Indian American folks who work here who were raised in the States and don't have any accent. And I've walked into conversations, like into meetings, expecting that I'm interacting with an Indian American who moved here in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then come to find out that it's a Indian American who was born and raised here since they were three.
Yeah.
And it's a very different...
It's very, very different.
And I notice how my expectations internally and how I'm holding the conversation shifts a little bit.
Yeah.
Where, like, I'm not able to, like, communicate whatever that nuance is in the back of my head, but something's happening where I shift posture just a little bit to be like, oh... I'm going to assume you're going to get some cultural norms if I throw out like 90s TV references or something.
Yeah, no, that's like, super. Like, it's really hard for Ankit. Like, it's really hard. We played this game where you draw pictures and write names, and like it's like telephone but with pictures and words. So I drew this amazing picture of a wall and a flower, and he looks at it and goes, "Wall, flower? There's no such thing as a wallflower. What is this? What? I don't know what this is." And like a pumpkin patch instead of drawing, he drew like a jack-o'-lantern and someone wearing like a smoking patch, because he, like, those things, he is now getting there, but like there are things that I can't say, or like I need to explain.
Yep.
I thought sometimes going and like just teaching MBA classes to immigrants who are coming in for to be like, this is the brand of Nordstrom's, like these are the things you're going to know, because not only was he learning all the business school stuff, like he was learning all the brand stuff that we just know by growing up here. Like, well, we know.
Super relevant here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see that switching, because I can't talk about, you know, Knight Rider or something.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. Like, and I'm not necessarily going to talk about like 90s hip hop.
Yeah.
Because I don't think you're going to get the reference. And then you're just going to think I made an offensive joke. Or, yes, like, said something that didn't make any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you have given me so much time. I end with one question, and I realize I haven't even thought much about this one. But I usually ask, what is something that you're just really into right now? So, it can be a book or a TV show or something that you're just, that is either making you think or giving you joy. So, for example, when I interviewed my mother, she said that it was being a grandmother. Except the hard part is you have to be a mother first to me.
Whoops.
Yeah, no.
You wouldn't get it.
Yeah. And I usually give one. Oh, I know. I remember. No, I forgot. I don't have one right now. But do you have anything? I'm trying to think. Yeah. I am reading this book about the brain, but I can't even think off the top of my head. I just love any books about neuroscience.
Yeah. Well, I did read a book called How the Brain Changes Itself on Neuroplasticity.
I just gave that book to someone.
Yeah.
I gave that book to Ankit and he never read it.
Okay. So one of the things that book, after a lot of counseling, you end up just feeling stuck with the genes you were given and with the grooming and hardwiring that came from your upbringing. And my therapist recommended this book, and it just talks about like more scientific cases of how the brain's actually
able to change its pathways.
Changing its pathways, so you don't always get mad
from the same triggers, or mm-hmm. close off to the loved ones from the, when yeah. the same topic comes up, or whatever that thing is. And then I've one of my other coworkers, Asian American guy, I've been having really interesting conversations with Kevin. Recommended a sci-fi a series of shorts. It's a sci-fi book called "The Story of My Life and Others" by Ted Chiang.
Yes, I just and heard he's actually about local. This somewhere. Yeah.
So he's local. He's from Tacoma.
Oh, cool.
Which is a city just 20-30 miles south of here.
I was born there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. He wrote Arrivals, like the story, mm-hmm. the short story that Arrivals was based off the movie.
Oh, cool.
But he just did this amazing short story on the Tower of Babel. I was raised Christian, still am. Just kind of bent my mind for a while, and it was enjoyable.
Awesome. Okay, well, thank you so much, Casey.
Yeah,
we have
yeah,
people waiting
so
to get
everything.
In our conference room, so this will go. It'll be the last episode of the year,
yeah.
2019.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah,
I'm excited
so
to listen.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks again.
Hey, listeners, if you've made it this far, I want to ask you a favor. If you could go over to Apple Podcasts and put a review and what you think of Mixed Identity, that would be super helpful. Again, if you have any thoughts of the episode that you just heard, you can check us out at Facebook at Identity Mixed or Instagram at Identity_Mixed. And I'd love to continue this conversation.
Our theme music is Ice Flow by Kevin McLoy, licensed by Creative Commons. It can be found at filmmusic.io or incomtech.com.